drawing room over here.
When might a paper round be the most dangerous job in the world? The answer? When it pits you against a league of evil grannies armed with deadly hankies. I'm talking about Charlie and the War Against the Grannies. It's a story that began life as a successful children's book written by Alan Brough, and now it's a musical theatre extravaganza as well. Anna Francesca Armenia is one of the stars of the show, and Kit Warhurst is the show's composer. They are my guests tonight in the drawing room. Welcome to you both.
Hi.
Good to be here.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So, Anna, introduce us to the character that you play, Hills, mm-hmm. And a little bit about the story of the show. You are, to put it kind of bluntly, you're the adventurous best friend.
Yes, that's an understatement, I believe, when explaining Hills. Basically, to give you a bit of background about the story, Charlie and the War Against the Grannies revolves around two best friends, Charlie and Hills. They're 12-year-old, pretty adventurous out there kids. However, Hills is more on the out there adventurous side, I'd say. Their relationship, they're best friends. However, Hills really does enjoy being the boss, which I'm not going to lie, I kind of love myself.
I'm so identifying with that myself.
Yes, exactly. So she's great fun to play. And they are on school holidays and they find themselves really bored with nothing to do one day when they decide, hey, why not try and get a paper round, which is something that kids don't do anymore these days, as they find out. And they do find out that a league of evil grannies are the people who are doing paper rounds in the neighbourhood, and they're not too happy about it, and so the adventure starts.
Oh, there you go. All right, so you and Alan, he plays Charlie, as you say.
Yes.
You're obviously both adults playing 12-year-olds.
Yes.
Do you play the age difference or, you know, for laughs, or is that something that you're better doing just playing it straight, getting into the actual headspace of a 12-year-old?
Yeah, we actually did experiment with that a little bit in rehearsals, but we just found that the dynamic of the relationship and the comedy worked a lot more if we were just sort of ourselves and not trying to play 12-year-old, because maybe I can get away with it a little bit, but I'm sure Alan won't mind me saying that perhaps he's not quite as a believable 12-year-old.
At 6'4".
At 6'4".
Hard to stretch beyond the
exactly.
belief.
But he's written it so beautifully in a way where the script alone serves its purpose, and we're just vessels to tell the story in the best way that we can, and it works so beautifully.
Kit, take us back to the show's creation. When did you get involved in it? How did this become a musical? How did it go from a children's book to a musical?
Well, I think Alan first spoke to me about it about 5 years ago, so it's been a really long time. And you know, for various reasons, it's stopped and started along the way. Obviously, we, like the rest of the arts community, we completely lost last year. But even prior to that, it was a slow going and a slow process. But it just came about with a conversation with Alan. He had already been speaking with Sarah Kriegler, the director of the show, about turning his book into a theatre play, and he really wanted to turn into a musical because obviously, you know, Alan's background is his. Obviously a musical champion. It's a huge part
appreciator,
of his life.
Yeah.
So he spoke to me with if I might be interested in getting involved with him in the musical side of things, which of course I jumped at because Alan and I have been, you know, really close friends for a long, long time now, probably 20 years. And we'd worked on the Spix and Spectacular, the live show that happened, God, I think that's probably about maybe even 10 years ago now. And you know, we had just such a wonderful time. So the chance to jump into something, you know, completely brand new with him and also something that I'd never done before because I'd certainly never done any theatre or musical theatre before was just really interesting and exciting thing to the prospect of it.
And when someone comes to you and says, I've written a book about some evil grannies who've taken over the paper round from a couple of 12-year-olds, yeah. What kind of musical references go through one's mind, or is that kind of just a much longer process?
That is a longer process. To be fair as well, they're definitely co-writes with Alan, and he's such a creative force. He was already hearing a lot of the songs in his head, had indeed composed the majority of many of the songs already. Some of them we wrote from scratch together, but a large part of it were already formed in his mind, and he would come to me with guitar chords and melody ideas, and certainly all the lyrics. And we would just sort of, I just help him craft them from that point on.
And how did you bring humour into the music? Because I imagine that's a huge part of the composition for this.
Yeah, well, mainly lyrically and performance-wise, really, which sort of that's where, you know, Fran comes into it, and Julia and Alan, because they're the only three actors as well as the puppets in the show. So I don't think there's a lot of humour, if you will, in the actual music, at least if there is, I'm not getting the joke or the joke's on me. But I think it's more... what we wanted to do was create a bit of a musical journey throughout the sort of 55 minutes that we knew we would have to be on stage. And, you know, we cover quite a bit of territory musically as well. It's not something that's just sort of sits in one genre and there. Like we it's a pretty broad church, musical church that we're bowing down to in this show. So, you know, we've got soul, R&B kind of banging numbers, and there's some like, there's heavy metal and there's some ballads.
It's got Queen all. Inspiration in there as well.
Yeah,
we were rock,
yeah, that's it.
All.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's 50s rock and roll. It's kind of, it's sort of, traverses the rope in many different ways.
Sounds like a lot of fun. And as an actor, what about you? How did the music figure into your performance? Like, how did you sell the shift from acting to song? And what about a good heavy metal scream? Did you have to work on that?
Well, I wouldn't say so much heavy metal, but definitely some rock screaming in there. I actually recently, last year when, you know, pre-COVID, when I was in Japan, I watched Queen in concert. So I feel like I brought some experience into that,
yeah,
into 12-year-old Hills. As Kit was saying, him and Alan wrote the music so beautifully, and also in a way that it just sticks. Like you go to bed with the songs ringing over and over and over in
I'm
your
so
head.
Sorry.
Which sometimes,
so sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes it's a curse. And I just want to text Kit in the middle of the night being like, it's all your fault, I can't sleep. Yeah. But
the riff is way too catchy.
Exactly.
How dare you?
Exactly. But the music, it just works so beautifully in hand with the script and with performance. Obviously, in a musical theatre world, all three things need to work in balance and complement each other. And if I'm being biased, I believe that it does so beautifully in this show, which makes it so easy to just perform and have fun and, yeah, doesn't require a lot of thinking on my behalf, I don't think.
And do you think it's those three elements that makes for a great children's theatre show? Do you need all of those things to work together? Is that how it all comes together?
Yeah, and also with our show in particular, there's such a visual component to it as well. The set design, the lighting, the puppets, the colours, all of that I think is so important specifically for children's theatre, because I'm not a parent myself, but, you know, it's pretty common knowledge to know that kids might be a little bit hard to keep entertained and, you know, sat still and concentrated for a period of time, and we're trying to do that for 55 minutes. But I think all of those components put together, especially the visual aspect of it, we can hear the kids yelling things out from the audience, and that's always a good sign that they're focusing and entertained. Sometimes I'm thrown out of focus when a kid says something really funny.
I was going to say, how does that work for you?
Oh, gosh. Because we'd been developing this, as Kit was saying, for quite a while, finally getting in front of an audience, we always knew it would be different, but I don't think I was quite prepared for being, I don't know, taken aback by some of the kids yelling out, like, just the most hilarious things.
He's behind you.
He's behind you.
Is this your first kids' show that you've worked on?
No, I have done quite a lot of kids' theatre in my time, but this is the first show I've done since, oh, God, it would have been over a year because of COVID. So in a way, it kind of does feel like a first for me. It's been that long. But kids' theatre, for me, there's always that sort of edge of, I guess, a fulfilment and accomplishment, because in the current climate and the way that things have been, especially with kids sort of being locked up at home like we all are, but for kids more so, how difficult that would have been for them. It's just so rewarding to come back doing a kids show for the kids in a time where they probably need it the most. And it's been so rewarding. It really has.
On RN Drive, I'm Elizabeth Koulas. Kit Warhurst and Anna Francesca Armenia are my guests in the drawing room tonight. And we're talking about their new musical project, musical theatre show, Charlie and the War Against the Grannies. As you mentioned, the show was meant to premiere in March last year, just as things were changing. So obviously a bit of a spanner in the works for your show. What was that like, shutting everything down and hoping, knowing that hopefully it would launch again at another time?
Well, I mean, like everybody experiencing it together, it was just really confusing and anxiety driving and very, very sad, to be honest. We were so excited about what we were doing together. We felt like we'd arrived at a place where we had something we thought was pretty special. We had been rehearsing it, I think, we're into our fourth week of rehearsal, and it was due to open after that week. And in that fourth week, we got the news that it was it and everything else around us had closed down. So it was as tough like it was for everyone. But we did decide, and thankfully, that we would soldier on for those final 3 days of the rehearsal and stay in the room that we're in, as sort of depressing as that kind of could be, knowing that we were doing it sort of to not perform, but we wanted to get it to the end of the performance and feel like we had a complete show, because it wasn't quite ready to go. We still needed those 3 days. So, and luckily we filmed it. And I think that was very important for us, because we did a little showing. We had some, a lot of the people in the show involved with the show have kids. So we brought all them along and some family members for that final day. We had a little showing in the rehearsal space we were in, and that was wonderful, just to sort of get that feeling of release and sharing of what we'd been doing. And we filmed it, so we used that film that we could go back and reference what the hell it was we were doing. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like crazy.
We only had a very short re-rehearsal period before we opened in Sydney last week, a little less than 2 weeks, I think, or 2 weeks. So provided we hadn't done the show in a year, just being able to press play and watch it was so helpful. There were still parts we were like, I don't even remember doing that. But it was definitely a very good idea at the time.
Yeah, and I think just given the fact that all of us hadn't worked for a year, there was something about, I think we shared the experience that we were having when we did come back. We were really out of practice, and, you know, it was our brains were so disengaged from the performance side of things, and we got tired quicker, and we did not remember the things that you might normally remember that, because we were just so out of practice. So the video recording of it was invaluable.
I believe that some members of the show, at least in the crew, potentially had moved on to other careers in that year. I mean, that's a reality for many in the arts sector, and has been over the last 12 months.
Yep.
Was that something that either of you had to consider in your careers over the last year or so?
I was really lucky. I was able to sort of do really tiny pieces of work behind the scenes in my studio. I composed music for the screen. So I was lucky that I just picked up a few small little things just to keep me going across the year. But yeah, I know people that have, you know, really have had to let their career go in the music industry, for sure, because it just became, it was not viable, completely not viable.
And with ongoing uncertainty, of course, that makes it even more difficult, doesn't it?
Which is still going on now. I mean, frustratingly for live music, still venues aren't able to open up to, you know, full capacity or to three-quarters capacity. I know that's providing some sort of really frustrating times for a lot of venue owners and everyone that works within the industry, because they simply are at a point now where it's economically really, really scary.
Anna, what about you? What about other actors and fellow performers?
Yeah, I think I've said this in the past about performers in interviews, and I'll stick by it probably for the rest of my life, but performers in particular, I believe, are some of the most passionate, stubborn, hardworking people on earth. And obviously, COVID, when it hit, theatres, live theatres, were probably one of the first sectors to completely shut down with no knowing of a possible return date. And for us, we're used to living contract to contract, not knowing when the next one will be. I personally have been in positions where I don't know where my next paycheck will be, or I'll land a 6-month contract and beyond that, who knows? And I only think about it at the end of that last month of the contract. And that's just the life that we've chosen to live. So in a way, I feel like performers have a sort of armor that that allows them to withstand this sort of hard lifestyle. But not going to lie, it didn't mean that COVID was easy for us. For me personally, it definitely wasn't. But as I said, the passion honestly got me through. There's nothing else in the world that I could see myself doing that fulfills me more than performing does. And I think I speak on behalf of every performer who still does this to this day. There's always, in my head, everything's temporary. It was only a matter of time until we could get back on our feet. And the feeling of doing it again after having gone through all that hardship is even sweeter. And there's no way I would have considered doing anything else.
How old were you when you decided that that was the life for you professionally, that this was the thing that you were passionate about?
I went straight to a music theatre degree after I finished high school. So I was 17 at the time. And I haven't looked back ever since, and I'm 27 now. So, wow, I'm 27. Oh, I don't like saying that out loud. But yes, it's been a decade.
What about you, Kit? When you obviously perform in other music groups, what kind of thinking did you bring to this particular composition that's different to your other performance work?
I think a certain naiveness to the whole project, because this is the first time I've ever done proper theatre before.
Yeah, what was that like, actually? I wanted to ask you about that too.
It's been an incredible learning journey, really enjoyable. I was quite anxious about what it might involve, but I was, again, getting to work with Alan, who's a really dear old friend, but also Sarah Kriegler, who co-wrote the script with Alan and has directed it. She's a dear old friend of mine as well, a university friend. So knowing that I was getting to work with them was, you know, I knew I was in, you know, some really, really safe hands, and that they wouldn't expect too much of me, given that they both knew that I was really, really green. I had to learn a lot of terms, like stage terms, which I had no idea what they were talking about for ages.
Prompt and off prompt, yeah, still know the difference?
I've got prompt and off prompt now. I only just worked that out, yeah. Upstage and downstage. Yeah.
You got the lingo down now.
Yeah, so I saw some of it still confuses me, you know. Difference between a sound check and a technical check. It turns out they're both the same for anyone out there who wants to know. I'm not sure really what I was able to add to it, other than hopefully I had an enthusiasm for a person that has never done something before, to want to learn as much as I could and to want to contribute as much as I could. I was absolutely amazed at the amount of rehearsal that goes into theatre. I wasn't ready for that. I think in most things that I've done outside of my band work, where you create music from scratch with a band, everything else I've done some television programs and some sort of, I did the Speaks and Spectacular theatre show, which was, you know, pretty heavily worked out before I got involved. You can sort of see the start and the finish, and you know what everyone's going to do within that. But with this one, it was actually sitting in a room with all the creatives and working out what was going to happen.
So it was built.
It really was, yeah. And I wasn't really ready for that and the time that it takes to do that.
Would you do it again?
Yes, I would. Yeah. When we started the first 4-week block of rehearsals, I thought, this is crazy. What are we going to do for 4 weeks? We're going to sit around and just like just be talking. You can't do that.
Fran's laughing like, that is the worst. Yeah, that's the 4 weeks where you develop the whole thing. You're sort of building and developing.
I know. Well, exactly. By the time we got halfway through, I realised, oh, my God, I don't think we're going to make it. we will not complete the show in 4 weeks. There's still so much to do. So, yeah, it was a real eye-opener.
With a kids show, how do you go about trying to bring along adults? Because, of course, you know, about half the audience or something are still adults bringing kids along to enjoy the show. How do you match that perfect Pixar point where you've got kids totally pulled into the fart jokes but parents also coming along with you, or caregivers coming along with you on the other parts of it?
You know what's hilarious? When we opened in Sydney, as the actor on stage, I can see a lot of faces and hear a lot of things while I'm up there. And the number of adults absolutely, I'm not just saying this because I'm in the show, but absolutely like enjoying themselves and laughing along with all the jokes that the kids were laughing at. It actually really was surprising in a way, because it's obviously a kid's show, but also not, because as I said, I'll keep referring to the script and Alan Brough and how brilliantly he's written it. He has written it just as a really entertaining piece of theatre, full stop. It not necessarily either way for adults or kids, but just a really entertaining piece of theatre. And I remember before I did the audition, I listened to the audiobook just to get myself familiarised with the show and the context. And I remember sitting there, fully grown adult, laughing my head off at some of the stuff that was in it. So put that on stage and in a visual, you know, full spectacular musical, it's just such a joy for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think with that someone, you know, Alan, he's got a pretty dark and rounded sense of humour. He is always going to put stuff in there that the adults are going to be able to.
Yeah, there are some for the adults in there.
Yeah, definitely.
Some one-liners for the adults.
Definitely.
As you both said, you've been in Sydney, you've premiered the show, you've put it in front of kids again for the first time in over a year. What was that like? Special? It sounds very special, but what was the experience like getting to do that?
Yeah, it was. A feeling of just finally being able to give a gift to someone that you've held on to for a very long time. So you've got a Christmas present that you haven't been able to see someone in that whole year, and it gets next Christmas and you've still got that present, you just really want to give it to them. It was kind of like that. And even just the lead up, you know, the tech rehearsals, the dress rehearsals, being on a stage, having the lights on us for the first time, having a mic on for the first time. It's stuff that you take for granted when you do it so much, but then take that away for a year. And it was really the small things for me that just made me go, oh my God, it's so good to be back. And then just hearing and seeing the kids and the adults and just the joy in the entire theatre. Yeah, it was incredibly special.
I imagine the dynamic in the room. There's no Zoom meeting that could get any Zoom.
I never want to hear the word Zoom.
Ever again.
Ever again.
No. Kit, what about you getting to see it all come to life?
Look, it was just wonderful. As Fran said, just experiencing that joy again, albeit a new audience for me, that age group. But, you know, just hearing the laughter and the screams and the joy come back, and to know that you're actually making some people happy in amongst what we've all been through, it was a really wonderful experience. And also, you know, not having seen these guys on a stage before and doing a show, it was really interesting, and I was so proud of them to sort of see them go from, you know, sort of humming along at about 80-90% and then just them take that last little step up to full performance mode was really great. It felt like we'd finally arrived when we got to do that those first couple of shows.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you both for joining me in the drawing room tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Anna Francesca Armenia and Kit Warhurst have been my guests in the drawing room. Charlie and the War Against the Grannies is on at the Arts Centre in Melbourne from April 14.